Okay. The lesson today is from the chapter Genesis 37. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. He was a helper to the sons of Bilhan and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that the father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Once Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered round it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from a distance, and before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he delivered him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but lay no hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hands and restore him to his father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the long robe with sleeves that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels carrying gum, balm, and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we killed our brother and concealed his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Then they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in blood. They had the long robe with sleeve taken to their father, and they said, "This we have found. See now whether it is your son's robe or not." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe." Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard.
Oh, our holy heroes. Nothing like a good, clean Bible story, right? Joseph's is unique, but like so many of our wholesome ancestors, we have a tale of jealousy, betrayal, murder, sex, slavery. It's a rags-to-riches story, one of fortune and famine, lies and thievery, brother turned against brother. Good, clean fun, right? Just gotta love our ancestors, our fathers of our faith. Whoever thought the Bible was innocent never actually read it. Yep, this story has it all. Mystery, power, revenge, dreams, everything except an amazing Technicolor dream coat. Did you ever actually hear Lebby mention anything about colors when referencing that robe? Nope. It's the long robes with sleeves. Wait, I thought it was red and yellow and green and brown and scarlet and black and ochre and peach and ruby and olive and violet and fawn and lilac and gold and chocolate and mauve and cream and crimson and silver and rose and azure and lemon and russet and gray and purple and white and pink and orange and blue. Apparently not. Well, what's a little artistic liberty, right? Never done anybody any harm. It's funny that the name of the show actually comes from a poor translation. Now, the King James Version of the Bible did read coat of many colors, but for those of you biblical buffs out there, you will remember that the King James Version is not a translation of Hebrew and Greek to English, but rather a translation of the Latin Vulgate. So it's never been the best version to read for accuracy. In Hebrew, the description is Kethoneth Pasim, which translates into English as robe with long sleeves. Now, it was probably a long sleeve wool coat, but I guess Joseph and the itchy long sleeve woolen robe doesn't sound nearly as exciting and doesn't quite play as well on Broadway as Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. So it turns out the Septuagint is also to blame. The Septuagint, you say? Remember? That is the Greek version of the Old Testament. So the word poikilos gets translated as many colors. So that's where the colorful part came in the first place. Now the New International Version translated as a richly ornamented robe, which might have lent itself a little bit better to theater. But at any rate, we know that Joseph's dad, Jacob, made him a special coat that caused his brothers to get super jealous, and that's what got the whole thing started. Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice didn't actually do a whole lot of research when they wrote this musical, as you might imagine. They admitted, though, to a 4-minute read of a children's Bible storybook, and they were off and running. Now, that might have been a good idea, because as you can see, the story takes several chapters. Even in one chapter alone for Libby, that was quite a lot of a story. So a lot of it doesn't make it into the play, and that's okay. Their story, their play, actually began much shorter, but over time, it grew and it grew. So I never knew much about these two showmen. I don't know if you all do, but I only really knew their names and that they were famous composers and lyricists. Tim Rice did all that Disney stuff back in my era. So I knew that. But during the past couple of weeks, I've been researching and have become intrigued by their stories. Let me just give you a snippet of it. Andrew Lloyd Webber was just a kid when he wrote this. But he was an incredibly accomplished kid. At 3 years old, that's Molly's age, he was playing the violin. By 6, he was composing music, and by 9, he was published. When he was 17 years old, he received a letter from a then 21-year-old law student that read, "Dearest Andrew, I've been told that you're looking for a with it writer of lyrics for your songs. And as I've been writing pop songs for a while and particularly enjoy writing the lyrics, I wonder if you consider it worth your while meeting me. Tim Rice." I guess he did think it was worth his while, because the two met up and started working on a project. Their first one didn't really make it anywhere. But then Andrew was contacted by the head of a music department at a prep school in West London. Remember, he's just a secondary student himself. But they were commissioned to write up something for this end of the term religious concert. So, in a matter of 2 months, these guys created a 20-minute pop cantata, they called it, of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It made its debut on March 1st in 1968 at Colette Court, and demanded repeat performances in May and November of that year. It was at the May performance that a Times music critic was in attendance, gave it a good review, and launched their careers. With each performance, it got bigger and bigger, and with this relatively unknown duo, a journey began. A journey which theater critic Michael Coveney called the most crucial collaboration of 20th century theater. Well, it didn't make its way across the pond until much later. It debuted on Broadway 14 years later when it opened in 1982 at the Royal Theater. A movie version came out in 1999 starring Donny Osmond, who played Joseph for 6 years on stage and did almost 2,000 performances. Now, I didn't actually see it until my godbrother was in a children's theater version in Santa Ana, something like a decade or so ago. Well, it turns out a whole heck of a lot of us see this show in children's theater. I suppose that's fitting because, of course, it was originally written for just that purpose. But you also might be interested in knowing that it is one of the most performed shows of all time. And that is because so many children's theaters produce it. Now, somewhere in my research, I read about how often it's produced, but I read so much and I listened to so many interviews that I lost that number. So you're just gonna have to believe me that it's a lot. It's like drop your jaw a lot. Really? A lot. But that makes sense, doesn't it? Because you can perform it in a church, you can perform it in a synagogue, you can perform it in schools, you can perform it in theater, you can perform it all over the place. There's a universal appeal to this show. And so, with that, you have Joseph. So as much as Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber took their liberties, especially with that technicolor part, it's still a biblical story. And so it does follow, if at least loosely, the story we read in Genesis. A little more than loosely, it follows pretty closely. But the brothers might not have had all the accents that we hear throughout the songs. You should go watch it if you haven't seen it yet. Go rent it, it's there. Or not rent, I don't know, download it. Or borrow it from Heather. I have it from Heather. So they have all these accents, right? They're singing in country and French and Jamaican. And Pharaoh probably didn't sing and shake like Elvis. I don't know. But despite all the weird aspects of this show, we do get to the story of Joseph. It symbolizes universality, that all of us are Joseph's brothers, no matter what language we speak or what type of accent we might have. We each are human beings. We each are culpable. We each are responsible. We each are capable of making a change. We're all able to make good on our mistakes. So Joseph's story is, of course, a story of forgiveness. His ability to interpret dreams is the gift that God gave him to climb his way out of the pit. But that wasn't the only gift. It was the ability to forgive. It might not be terribly easy for us to identify with Joseph in the show, either the biblical version or the Broadway one, perhaps. But all of us have betrayed and been betrayed one time or another. For some of us, we felt that betrayal in our families. We felt like we never fit in. In Joseph's case, he was well loved by his father, but that just engendered jealousy among his brothers. For others of us, we feel like we don't get that love from our parents or from our siblings. Or maybe the betrayal in our lives has come from someplace else. Maybe it was a romantic relationship or a friendship or maybe even our place of work. Betrayal. Loss of trust. It's hard to come back from something like that. Joseph lost everything. He lost his parents, the siblings that he thought loved him as he loved them. He was separated from his family and sold into slavery. We don't really know how old he was, but we imagine him to be just a boy. Of course, we've said it already, but we can't stop thinking about those poor kids who have been separated from their families in fear for all the damage that they are currently feeling and what it will cause them in the future. Joseph, too, was forcibly separated. In his case, it was the brothers that did the separating. But either way, he found himself alone, scared, and left to fend for himself in a foreign land. It was his ability to interpret dreams that helped elevate his status. But he was betrayed once again by the wife of his master, and he went from servitude to imprisonment. Yet even then, he wasn't destined to remain there forever. He foretold of a famine, but also used his wits to get out of prison and help people survive through those tough 7 years. So when his brothers finally crossed his path again, he wasn't dead, he wasn't stuck in a pit, or he wasn't a slave, he wasn't imprisoned, and he wasn't even hard on his luck. By this point, he had it all. And he could have crushed them. Now, he didn't exactly make it easy on his 11 kin, but ultimately, he did forgive them because he loved his family. And despite the horror that they put him through, he truly longed to reunite with them. So I think there are a couple of lessons to be learned here. First, God will help us find a way out of the pit. It was not easy. It wasn't like God just pulled him out and put him back in, his family with all the love and adoration he had from his father, or transformed him immediately to royalty. Didn't work like that. But God did give him the means. In his case, it was to interpret dreams. I don't know what God gives you. I don't think it's always obvious. But I do think that God gives us what we need to help us find a way out of our pits, to liberate us, to guide us back to who we are and who we dream to be. Now, that is not a promise that we are going to be thrust into powerful positions. And God knows Joseph himself was not immediately pulled out of there straight to royalty. Instead, there were a lot of years where he was enslaved, where he was imprisoned. Anyone else would have thought that God had abandoned them, but Joseph knew what so many of us find out. It is at those moments where life is the pits, where we feel like we have hit rock bottom and things just can't get any worse. That is where we feel the presence of God. And the strength of God is the ability to face another day despite the powerlessness, despite the hopelessness that seems to surround us. In subtle, and yet I will argue miraculous ways, God empowers us. God gives us hope. God makes a way out of no way. And so it's at those times when we need God the most that we usually experience God the most. It's funny how that is, because in reality, God is present all the time, but we're not always looking. It's those times that we're in a pit, that we're caged, that we're frightened, those times that we feel most alone. Those are the times when God is revealed and we realize exactly what Michael said. We are never alone. God is with us. God is with us in that pit. And God will lead us out. It might not look the way we want it to, the way we expect it to, but when we open ourselves up, when we quiet the noise and listen, God will be revealed. So, Joseph made his way out of the pit. He used his gifts. He was elevated to the highest of statuses, but he was still orphaned. When faced with a chance to cast revenge on his brother, he thought about it and even sort of enacted a plan. But ultimately, he chose love. He did one of the hardest things that God asks of us, and at the same time, one of the most liberating acts God invites us into. It's that second lesson to learn, and probably the hardest of our lives, forgiveness. It is forgiveness that ultimately frees Joseph. Yeah, he was already liberated from prison, and it appeared that he had everything at that point when his brothers walked in groveling for help. But it wasn't until he forgave his brothers that he himself was actually set free. That doesn't mean that the memory of what happened would not exist, even that it wouldn't hurt him anymore, but it no longer had power over him That's the key. It's not easy. I'm not going to pretend that it is. I don't get to just sing a little song and make it better. It is hard. And I want to be clear that I'm not telling you to invite back in painful experiences or people that are going to continue to hurt you. In this case, the brothers could not throw him back in the pit again. Although I'm sure that he did go there emotionally the moment he saw them. But their reunion and his ability to forgive them brought healing to all of them. I don't know what healing and forgiveness will look like for you, but I do know it can transform you. Ultimately, that is the miracle of Joseph's story. It's not about the type of coat, rainbow or long-sleeved. It's not about dancing go-go dancers, although wouldn't it be nice if all of our stories included singing cheerleaders in high boots? Instead, it is recognizing God's presence in the pit, finding hope when it seems there is only despair, using the gifts we have been given to empower ourselves to make a change in our lives, and showing mercy even if we have the chance at revenge. Ultimately, that is what makes this story so miraculous. But I still like the flashy coat. Amen.